Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I'm Alice Living, best-selling author, personal trainer, and host of Give Me Strength, where we discuss the positives of living a stronger life physically and mentally with the hope to inspire you to do the same. Welcome to Give Me Strength. So my guest today is an absolutely incredible woman and someone I've actually wanted to have on the podcast since we first started Series 1, so I'm really excited that I have her here today. She is three times the winner of the London Marathon, three times winner of the New York Marathon, one time winner of the Chicago Marathon, previously fastest woman of all time over the marathon distance, which is absolutely incredible, and also the BBC Sports Personality of the Year winner. She is none other than Paula Radcliffe, and I am so excited to have you here today. How are you doing, Paula?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you? It's an honour to be here. Thank you.
Oh, no, I'm so grateful. I'm really good, thank you. And I actually wanted to start by just sort of taking you back. I know that you started running when you were very young, but I'd love to hear, I know that it was sort of in the family, I know that your dad and your mum were both involved with running, but how did you start your sort of running career and your love for running, really?
Well, I hope my easiest answer is that I can't actually remember a time when I wasn't running. So I think I just loved the way that running made me feel, even before I realised there was anything competitive in it. Just the fact of it just running along as a small kid, I really enjoyed. I saw my dad training and taking part in marathons, and so I was inspired by that side of it, the fun of mass participation, road racing. And I joined an athletics club when I was nine. I was very lucky to have a great team and a lot of friends there as well. So it became also my social side as well as my competitive outlet, and a lot of my goals came through that way. So it kind of developed as that. So my dad was very much an introduction to it. He had raced at school and then he'd given up and then he'd started back again. And so he really encouraged me to stick with it if that was what I wanted to do, and gave me little pointers kind of to win little school races and things when I was little, but generally just supported me getting me to places. My mum only started to run when she got fed up driving us down to the athletics club every night and then just sitting there waiting with the other mum. So they started going for a run together. So she actually came to it later and being introduced through us. But she was a cross-country team manager for a long time at Bedford County. So it kind of kept it in the family. So it was almost like my parents were there at the races, but they weren't there just for me. Yeah. So all of the pressure wasn't kind of on me. It was on just enjoying it and just doing the best that you could. And that was something that my dad always kind of really stressed, that the important thing is that you enjoy it and you have fun with it.
Definitely. I think it's really interesting as well that you picked up on the social side of any sport, to be honest. And I actually think that's something that really keeps people engaging in sport in a meaningful way, is not just, you know, like you said, it's great to move our bodies. We all know that that does feel good and it makes us feel great. But actually the social connection, I think particularly with running, if you look at things like park run, running events, the things that people really get from that is not just necessarily the challenge they put through themselves through, but also the people they connect with along the way. And I think it's so interesting that that was such a crucial part of your sort of early start in running. And that was really what almost kept you there in a way.
Yeah, and I think it's really important. I think particularly for girls, but for all kids growing up, it has to be fun and they have to have a group that they enjoy being with. Yeah. And you're also with a group of other kids that have similar habits to you. They enjoy doing similar things, which is why you're there in the first place. So I found that my best friends and the friends that I could trust and rely on the most probably through sport rather than at school. And it was always a choice, and it should always be a choice to take part in sport, whereas school you have to go to and you're there with the class and you're there with whoever you're with. But it's a choice in sport. And I think that we're very privileged to have that choice. And that's why I think it's really key that kids get the opportunity to try lots of different sports, to find the one that they enjoy and the one that that social side and the friends are there for as well, because that's what's going to keep them going when it maybe isn't going so well in the sport. If your friends are there, they'll still keep you going.
Definitely. And I think, you know, it's so interesting that you talk about PE at school, because I hated PE at school. And like, I can't believe now that I have a career in some ways in sport, because I just hated that kind of, I wasn't into netball, I wasn't on any teams, I didn't really excel at anything that they did. So I think you're absolutely right, you know, that like, the more that kids can engage in sport inside school is a great way to kind of dip your toe in the water. But I guess outside of school is where you really get that kind of, you know, you've made a choice to be there. And actually, if you enjoy it and you have friends there, it makes so much more of a difference.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I think school tends to be, because of the nature of it, it has to be more geared towards team sports. And we're not all team players. It doesn't mean it can't be social. As we've said, running is extremely social, but it's an individual sport. And you don't have to have great hand-eye coordination. You don't have to be good with a ball and aiming particularly. It can be lots of different things. And so you don't have to be the last one there waiting to get picked, and you don't have to rely on anyone else. You can get out there and do it yourself.
Definitely. Now, I read that in your first race at national level, you came 299th out of 600.
And
then
five.
You went, and then you went on to come fourth in the same race just 1 year later. And I think for me, that was such an amazing thing to read, because I think so many people really beat themselves up when they start something and they're not instantly good at it. You know, I see it with weight training, I see it with running, even with myself. You know, I sometimes go out for a run and I'm not a runner. And I find the first few kilometers so difficult and I'm like, oh God, I'm rubbish at this. But actually to read that about you and then to hear that, you know, in the space of a year, obviously you showed talent for it, but in the space of a year, you went on to improve so much. I just wondered kind of what happened in that year. What was your catalyst that really took you from going from not really winning and not coming close to actually being, you know, someone who really excels in their sport? What was almost the kind of catalyst for you for that?
Well, there are a number of things. First of all, I have to clarify, it was the under 13 girls. So I was a bottom year under 13 when I finished 299th. So all the girls that were a year older than me moved up. So I became the eldest in the age group. So that definitely helped. And then the second thing was actually on the way back from that race. So I'd been really happy because I was in the top half of the field and I was a bottom year. It was my first race for my new club. And we actually went home thinking, okay, this was good. There are things that I can improve on. My mum and dad, we were new to it. So I think we arrived about an hour before the race, didn't have time to walk the course, spent about half an hour of that queuing for a toilet and then getting over to the start. So it was very much chuck me in the deep end and see what I could do.
Sure.
I'd never run in a race that big before. And then afterwards, my coach said to my mom, I'm trying to get a team together to win the team title next year. And I wondered if Paula would be able to come down to the track twice a week instead of once a week, so on a Tuesday and Thursday night instead of just Tuesday nights. And so she said to him, well, why are you asking me? Ask her, it's her sport. And so the fact that he thought I was good enough to make the team was enough for me to say, okay, I like this. He thinks I can be good enough. I'm going to ditch judo, which I was going to on a Thursday night, and I'm going to go to athletics twice a week. And we had a great group of girls. We were really good friends. And we trained hard, building up for that all year. And then we did win the team title. And I was our second scorer home. And I finished fourth. So that for me was a very early indication that if you prepare for something and you work hard for something, then you will get better results.
Yeah.
And also it was spread on the team. So there was never a huge pressure, like you have to finish in this position. We were all running. And in the race, we're all looking around thinking, okay, we need to help because everyone else is running really well. So we need to run really well to be able to win the team.
Do you think there's an element of one of that with that is having someone who really believes in you?
Mm-hmm, I think absolutely. For me,
you know, like when I was younger and when I was, I trained as a dancer previously. And I think that the thing that really helped me confidence wise was that I was never the best. But as soon as someone really showed belief in me and showed that they just wanted me to get better, that was almost like, okay, I'm going to work really hard now for them. And I think it sounds like you had that with your coach.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so much, Alex, such a great coach, because I think he really understands the individuals.
Right.
Spends a lot of time researching what works best for each individual athlete. We would go around to his house sometimes on a Sunday afternoon. You know, I don't know what it'd been in the 80s, and there would literally just be bits of paper all over the living room floor, and each girl would have their own different schedule working out because everybody is a bit different, and it would obviously come together for the training sessions because we would all train together, but it would be tailored to them. And then one of the most important things was you never stop learning. So you always learn something, even from a bad race and from a good race, you learn something. So as long as you keep learning, you keep moving forward, to never be afraid to learn, to admit that you were wrong there and to learn. And trust your instincts was a big thing with Alec. So he used to say, this is how I can recommend that you run the race, but at the end of the day, it's you out there racing it. And you're the one that's going to have to react to different things that I can't predict in that race in the split second, so you've got to get good at doing that.
Yeah.
And so that was something that he taught us to ask for help, to accept help, but also to be able to do it on our own and to make those decisions and to trust yourself to be able to do that. So to trust the process and to trust actually your call in the race.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, isn't it, that you know your body better than anyone else. So you have to go with that gut instinct of like, where am I at? How's my body feeling? You know, you can get all the guidance in the world, but ultimately it comes down to you and whether you're right and ready for whatever race you're doing or whatever event you're doing. I'd love to know the process of how you go from being a club runner, really enjoying it, you know, starting to take it a bit seriously, to really then performing on the world stage. I mean, your career was just incredible. I only read out some of your achievements at the start, but you really have done so much, you know, in your time. And I'd love to know that process, I guess. Who was around you? How did it really build? When was the moment that you sort of went, I can do this really seriously? And also, I think ultimately what we've come to know about really successful sports people is the amount of sacrifice that goes along with choosing that as a career, you know, what you have to give up in order to say, this is where I want to go and this is what I want to do. So I'd love to hear about almost that process and that journey.
I think for me, I think it was a really gradual process. And I actually don't think it was a huge sacrifice.
Really?
No, because it never felt like I was making a huge sacrifice. Obviously, there were sacrifices I had to make. I couldn't see my family as much. I couldn't go to family weddings. I couldn't go to friends' things. I couldn't go to university things. But the gain that I was getting out of it was more important to me than what I felt like I was missing out. So I never felt like I was missing out.
Yeah.
And I think if it had ever got to the point where I really felt like I almost resented running because I was missing out somewhere else, then that for me would have been the time to stop. So I think the fact that it was a gradual process, the fact that we did have a strong team, so a huge social aspect in my team and at training nights. And I was very close to, still am very close to my coach and kind of grew on with him there. And or he was always like second dad to me and kind of part of the family there. My mum and dad would always go out with them at major events and things like that. So it really felt like it was kind of an extension of my hobby for a long time. But actually thinking about it, I was already kind of a professional athlete, but I wasn't. I was still a student. So I didn't need to be, I didn't have that pressure of you have to be successful because this is how your income's coming in. Because it was just kind of an added bonus.
Yeah.
So I think that helped to keep the pressure off me a little bit there. And certainly the fact that you enjoy it and it's something that you want to do is what keeps you going when you get the setbacks.
Do you find the transition, or did you find the transition from running nationally and being in this country to then suddenly being on a world stage, having lots of attention on you. Did you find that fine? Were you actually, was it quite enjoyable? Or was it almost like, oh my God, this is really intense? And also I always think to myself, you know, I'm guessing this was in a time before social media. So you probably didn't have all of that noise around you, but it maybe meant that like the actual, you know, intensity of the race was maybe greater, you know, doing loads of media interviews and, you know, people want your time and you having to focus on now being on a world stage. Did you find that difficult?
Well, if I first do the going abroad, I loved going to race internationally. My first ever international race was an Ekiden relay in Hawaii.
Oh my God.
I mean, how can you not enjoy that when you're like 15 and you're getting sent over New Year? We had New Year twice because we flew and we experienced it in the air. So that for me was like, okay, I want more of this because this is great. So if I run well, I get more trips like that. So I don't think I felt like it was pressure. I just thought it was an amazing opportunity. I studied languages. I loved languages. I've always loved traveling and visiting new places. So this just felt like, okay, this is great. I can get something out of my running and I can tick off the other things that I enjoy doing as well. And I think, again, it was a really gradual process. And my first introduction to proper international racing, I guess, was the World Cross Country in 1991 when I finished 15. And then Alec and I went back and we kind of made plans and he'd studied the split times of the girl who'd won the race and we trained to that all winter to try and get a medal the following year. And then we got out to Boston and it snowed and the course was way different and way slower than it had been the previous year. But I won that one. So that was a really big important step for me in terms of saying, okay, if I want to do this professionally, I think I'm good enough now. That was kind of the tick off it. I still need to make that transition from good junior to good senior.
Yeah.
But the potential is there if I do it and I work hard enough at it and I've certainly got a good enough team around me to be able to do that. So I think that really, really helped. And in terms of the social media, I think that certainly is an element that makes it harder today. I mean, my first introduction was actually through my agents at the time. Who actually looked after a lot of footballers. And they basically just put me in a room in front of a camera and someone just threw awkward questions at me for a couple of hours. And that was my media training.
It
was probably ahead of its time then because that was, I was doing that in 1992, which was massive.
I do think it's an added pressure. And I think if you look at athletes these days, they have to be media people first. And, you know, they have to be so good on camera. They have to answer questions. They're so scrutinized on such a higher level now. It is a whole nother facet that they have to navigate. And if you're already trying to navigate a challenging career, you know, if you only look at things like the Olympics as a recent example of, you know, the vast array of athletes that went out there and all of them have to be sort of, you know, not only performing to the highest level in their sport, but then also navigating a social media journey while they're out there as well. And I can see how it can be very distracting and actually really hard to deal with as well, particularly if things don't go right for you or if you have a bad race or you have a bad event, you know, the kind of the backlash from that you can get is terrible. So I can imagine it to be really distracting. And that actually leads me on to my next question, really about mindset. I think that for me, one of the things that I'd love to understand from you is I could admire the physical strength. And I think obviously it takes incredible physical strength to do what you did. But I think when it comes to endurance events, it really is the mindset that fascinates me. It's how you get yourself into a mentality. You know, I've seen you run some of your races when perhaps you're not, but maybe you look as though you're struggling through injury or you're in pain. You are feeling challenged by the conditions, for example. You know, what are you saying to yourself and what is the mindset that you've had to coach yourself to get into that allows you to overcome something that would make me definitely go, I'm going to stop now?
Well, I think first, I actually love a challenge.
Yeah.
And I embrace the challenge. And so I think that is really important. It's not like I hate that. I don't want to feel like I'm up against something. I actually quite like that feeling of being under pressure and having to sort things out and kind of be stimulated in that way to try and figure things out. I like problems. I've got a logical brain, so I like trying to sort things out or work things out. And it was not a game, but it kind of felt like a game challenge for me, racing, because it is just something that you've got to figure out and you've got to kind of work with your body. You've got to work out what your strengths are, what other people's weaknesses are, how to figure in factors and elements on the day that can change and adapt to those.
Yeah.
And also not take it too seriously. At the end of the day, it is just sport. And nothing really, really serious is going to happen if I don't win at the end of the day. It's just that I'm going to be disappointed. And once you kind of get past that, then it's not that you've got nothing to lose, because you've got a lot to lose because you don't want to be disappointed. And it is important to you, and you have to have those nerves. Otherwise, I don't think you can perform.
Right.
But also kind of keeping that sense of perspective in there, I think, is quite important too. It is just sport, and it is, as my dad used to say, it's meant to be fun. So if you're not enjoying it, kind of get out. So the pressure does sometimes stop you enjoying it as much.
Right.
But usually that's because of external things like injuries,
right,
rather than just the pressure of it being a big race.
Mm. I think, you know, one of the messages that you keep saying, you know, over and over again is you have to enjoy it and it has to be fun. And I think with any exercise, that's always been my messaging, is like, unless you're, you know, not enjoying it, if you're hating every second, if it doesn't feel fun, choose something else. It's not worth it. But I think that, you know, if you were to give some tips, I know that there's lots of amateur runners that will be listening, or people that are taking up running as a way of getting outside, getting some exercise in. What would you give in terms of advice for them with that mindset? You know, if they're going out for a long run, are there things that you would used to, and I listened to a podcast that you were on recently that said, you know, you used to break down each mile into like, well, I've only got this amount of minutes, I've got this to do. Are there any other sort of tips that you've got for people that are trying to get better at running and that are getting out, you know, for sort of longer runs?
Well, I think first and foremost is join up with a group of friends, or a run club or a running club, just because it's easier if you've kind of got the social side as well, to help each other through long runs and through workouts and things like that.
Yeah.
And if you really want to improve, you've kind of got to include those key areas, the long run and the workout session. So making that fun and having somebody else there to go through it with you and motivate you can really, really help.
Yeah.
Setting targets and goals and working towards those goals. So nobody just goes in and does something straight away. You've got to set a plan and work towards it. And that plan has to be flexible too, because we are all real people. Things happen. We get sick. We get a load of work. And we have to move things around. And forcing yourself to do something just because it's written down on paper as part of the plan isn't always the best move. So I think being able to recognize, okay, I feel really tired today. I've got all this going on. I need to just take an easy day and then try and do that hard thing another day, will reap benefits in the long term, because you'll get more out of the session than when you do it properly.
Yeah.
And yeah, trying to be focused really helps. And that's what my counting technique was, that I kind of developed in training, but really implemented it in the marathon, because it really helped me to stay focused. And one of the things we talked about a lot was you've got to be in the moment.
Yeah.
But you need to be really aware of the big picture too. So you have to know how far you've got to go. You have to know what's going on in the race around you. You have to know what's coming up and what's going on with your rivals and when the next drinks table is and lots of things. But you also basically just need to think about one foot in front of the other.
Okay.
So that's what counting did for me. It enabled me to break a mile down into much smaller segments. So if I counted to 100 three times, that was a mile. So it told me where in the mile I was, but it also gave me something else to focus on, which number comes next. And it was really straightforward and really simple that I could do when I was really tired, and stopped me worrying about things that were outside of my control.
Yeah. Mine wouldn't be 300. Mine would be more like 800.
It's not 300 now.
We'll go with it. We'll be back after this.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Welcome back to Give Me Strength. Can you tell me about some of your most challenging moments in your career? Things that you found really, really difficult to overcome, injuries. How did you sort of navigate these? What got you to focus on the bigger picture, like you just said?
Well, I mean, sometimes it is really hard. And one of the first things for me that was really, really hard was my foot injury in 1994. So my navicular collapsed, and there's the bone in the arch of the foot, and that caused a stress fracture And it wasn't diagnosed at the time. So a couple of times they diagnosed it as ligament damage, set it in plaster for 3 weeks, came out and I ran and it still hurt. I saw a lot of people, was getting pretty desperate. And at one point I saw somebody who said, okay, you're never going to be able to run again. And I can still remember going home, crying to my dad and saying, they said, oh, I'm not going to be able to run anymore. And my dad's like, because my dad's very practical like me, and he's just like, okay, well, lots of people go through life and they don't run. Doesn't mean you can't do something else. We can think of something else that you want to do. I'm like, oh, you don't understand. I don't want to do something else. I want to run. So I've got to find a way to get it better. So then I started calling a lot of people that had had similar foot injuries, and I finally managed to get a number for Roger Black, and I called him, and he recommended Dr. Müller Wohlfahrt in Germany. And I was actually about to go abroad for my year abroad at university, and I was working in Germany for the first 5 months of that. And so I got an appointment and I flew from Düsseldorf down to Munich to see him, and he looked at it, and by then I knew it was a stress fracture, but it just wasn't getting better. And he was able to treat it and to give me a whole series of exercises to take out a lot of fluid from the joints, and basically to get it stable enough with the help of orthotics and things like that to be able to get back running again. One of the things that was really key about him was from the beginning, there was never any question. He was like, you will run again. We will do this. It's going to be hard and it's going to take a lot of your time, and I can't give you a time scale, but you will. And I was back the following, so that was November, I was back racing just after Christmas, and I raced the world cross country in March. I finished 18th. It wasn't great, but it was certainly a huge step back for me.
So
that was a really big obstacle to get over. And it took a lot of perseverance and a lot of support from my family and my coach and the whole team around me to be able to do that. And probably the biggest one in terms of actually getting on with the rest of my career. The other one, like really big for me, would have been the Olympics. But that was never something that I felt like, okay, immediately after Athens, there were what concerns and worries. Had I done damage to my body, had something happened there that I wouldn't be able to compete again. But it was short-lived in terms to of what I've gone through with my foot. So it was really just more getting over the mental trauma of Athens rather than the physical side of it.
Yeah. And do you feel like as well, because the Olympics is so much of a world stage and there's so many eyes on you, did you almost feel like that was added pressure with that one?
It was added pressure from the minute that I got injured. Because when it's all going well, that kind of pressure just always seemed to bounce off me. It didn't worry me when I was running well, because I was just going to do my best and that was the best that I could do anyhow. It's when you're injured and you know you're not going to be able to do your best, or you're scared you're not going to be able to do your best. That's when you notice all of the external pressures. And I think the thing was, because of what happened in Athens, the Olympics became a bigger deal for me. Because it didn't work out that time. It does, and then you've got to wait 4 years for the next one. It's not like the World Championships doesn't work out once. You can try again in 2 years. It's actually the same level of competition. But when it didn't work out twice, and I'd finished fourth in the one before that, which was good at the time, but I was frustrated with not to get a medal, then it started to become a bigger deal and maybe to weigh on me a lot more. And I think that's what's tough about the Olympics, is the fact that it is once every 4 years. Aside from when COVID hits, it never moves. And it is always there. And particularly coupled with a distance like the marathon, it's hard to get it right for one day every 4 years.
I can't even imagine the amount of tapering and programming that goes into doing, you know, on a macro scale, you have 4 years, you know, to prepare for. But then on a micro scale, you've got so many other things that can happen within that time, that it's just, it must be such a huge challenge and a huge amount of pressure. And going from your most challenging moments, I'd love to hear from your perspective what your highlights are. What are the things that you really cling on to that you say, those were some of the best moments of my career?
In the career, there's lots. I mean, first World Cross Country in Boston in 1992 was very special, because that's the one that gave me the belief that I could make a career out of it, and I could be successful on the international stage as a senior. And then at the same time, winning the senior one in 2001 was huge for me, because it had been a goal for 9 years and I hadn't been able to do it. I'd come close a couple of times, but I hadn't been able to win it. And so to finally do that was a big thing for me personally, and also in terms of moving on to the marathon, because it meant I could draw a line under the cross country. I achieved my potential there and I could move on fully to the marathon. The Commonwealth Games in Manchester was huge. I didn't get the chance to compete in 2012, but that Commonwealth Games, the major championships on home soil, that Manchester crowd was amazing. It was a very, very special experience, as was the European Championships just after. I mean, there was virtually no one in the stadium that time, but the fact that it was taking the European record from Ingrid Christensen, who was such a huge idol of mine growing up, that was really, really important moment too. Oh, sorry, I'm listing loads here.
No, please do.
The first marathon in London, amazing career. First marathon in London as well, because it was my first one, and it was the first experience of that magic that is the London Marathon for a British athlete, which until you've actually run it, I don't think you can fully grasp and fully understand. So you never forget your first one. But the last one was very special too. And the world records were also important in there.
Of course.
London has a lot of happy memories for me. And New York does too.
Yeah. Moving on, and I actually, you know, I think there's something that I feel must have been a challenge, but I'd love to hear from your perspective how you found it. But really digging into body image, comparison, I think as a marathon runner, so many of us will look at the physique that's needed or that we see presented in marathon runners. Did you ever feel a pressure in that sense? And, you know, like we said earlier, the fact that social media didn't exist was probably a huge tick in your favor. But did you ever feel a pressure in that sense? And did you find navigating body image throughout your career, and then also when you retired, did you find that that then changed it as well and it gave it kind of different perspective?
I guess the short answer is no. But I think the older that I've got, the more I've really realized and appreciated how fortunate I was by the surrounding I had growing up. And my mom and dad, my grandparents were always really keen to stress the importance of food as a fuel, but also as nutrition and as something to enjoy. And that your body naturally finds, so everybody has something good in their body, and what works well for me in sport is not necessarily what another woman might think is an amazing body, but I don't have a problem with that because it helped me achieve a lot in sport. Mm-hmm. And my feet are completely messed up now and they're horrible to look at, but sometimes I look at them and think, oh, but I actually don't care because they've really helped me a lot, and I owe them a lot. So I think getting that perspective there really, really helped to be able to not worry. I didn't really worry about things like that. I was in Kenya over Christmas and someone came up to me and said, my God, I thought you were massive. I said, no, the girls I raised were just tiny. And, so they must have thought I was some kind of 6 foot something giant.
Yeah.
because I was always racing alongside these really shorter girls. So I think I never felt that I couldn't compete with them because I was a different build to them because of the role models before me. So Sonia O'Sullivan is taller than me, I think. Liz McColgan is roughly the same height. Ingrid Christensen, a little bit smaller, but roughly the same height. Greta Weiss, the same. So I had seen people my build be successful. So I never thought of it as a reason that I couldn't be. In the same way that when I was diagnosed with asthma, the best thing that my local GP said to me was, this isn't going to stop you doing your sport. You're just going to have to learn to manage it and cope with it. But it's not going to stop you achieving everything that you want to do and that you're capable of doing. And I think that was really important, that was kind of stress to me, and that I had a very positive relationship with food and with my body, and my body was successful. I was also very lucky. I went through puberty very, very gradually. So I didn't have any sudden huge surges. I just grew really, really gradually. And so I never had that period where people suddenly grow and then they've got no strength and strength needs to catch up. And I didn't really go through that so much. So I think that really helped me in terms of sport, and it was pretty much the perfect progression then. And I think had I hit that point where I'd started to try and lose too much weight, I think my coach and my mom would have been on me like that.
Yeah.
Because it was really important. They were there at the end of races. Mum and dad were always with a snack as soon as it finished. I wasn't allowed to go out for a day of racing without a really good proper breakfast to keep me going for the whole day. So I really understood the importance of that growing up. And that's what I try and pass on to my kids now.
Yeah, I was going to say, in terms of the conversations that you have with your kids, has it ever come up where you sort of discuss body image and you talk about confidence and comparison?
Yeah, and it also comes up, and I drive them crazy because if I get sick, I always have to eat the right things. So I have lots of orange juice, lots of vitamin C to try and get better and put all these nutrients into me. So I'm trying to make them do that. And my daughter, if she gets sick, she doesn't want to eat or drink anything. And so I just drive her. She's like, Mom, I'm not like you. I said, no, but you still have to put the fuel inside you to get better.
Yeah.
And they definitely do, I think, because they've grown up seeing that.
Yeah.
I hope they both have a healthy relationship. My son's way too fussy for my liking, but I'm trying to make him understand that he does need to kind of broaden what he does eat, but he does eat healthily.
Yeah.
And that they need to see the strengths and the positives in their body. So everybody's body is different, but it's all right for something.
Definitely. And actually, talking about family, you know, you've referenced your mum and dad. I also heard you talking on a podcast about your grandma, who sounds amazing. And also when you talk about your kids, it seems as though family is really important to you. And I think, you know, if you have that support network and that support structure, everything seems so much more possible, I think. But I know that you've spoken really bravely about your daughter's journey through her cancer diagnosis, which must have been devastating, particularly, I guess, during COVID as well, even more challenging. But how did you find coping with such a difficult time? And obviously talk about it as much or as little as you feel comfortable.
No, I mean, I think for me, having the support team around me and being able to stick to the plan, it is what really helped us. And I think I always try and look at the positives in any situation. And we were very, very fortunate to live where we do, to have it reacted to as quickly as possible. If anything, for the timing of it, COVID was actually a blessing because I wasn't working. So I didn't have to go through that dilemma of I'm not able to work because I need to be with my daughter because I didn't have any work anyway. And it wouldn't have been a difficult decision had it been there, but it was completely taken away. And she didn't need to think, oh, okay, I'm taking my mum away from work. What are we going to do? Because that wasn't there either. So I think that actually did really help us to kind of be in our own little family support bubble and just get with it day by day. And I think my grounding and my experiences, everything that I'd built up, the resources from sport really helped me. Because everything you do is about, this is the plan. The plan is going to work. We're going to stick to it. And we could see it working. We could see the tumor shrinking with the chemo. So even though on the one hand, I could see the impact it was having on Isla and it was completely draining and it's really hard to, as a parent, to see your child go through that.
Yeah.
And the guilt that comes on for not having spotted it sooner, or is it something I did that caused this? That was where the hospital staff was so great. They said, look, okay, this is completely treatable. We have caught it soon enough. So you don't need to feel guilty about anything there. This is nothing that you did.
Yeah.
And this is nothing to do with where you live or any power lines that run near you or all the things that go through your head. They were really good at reassuring me with that. And so just sticking to that plan and going through it and being able to have that, even if it was only 20 minutes, where I could kind of sneak out just to clear my head, work out my frustration, have my time running while Gary was able to visit Isla, because they would only let one of us in the room with her at any time. So he would come visit, I would go for a run. But that run was so beneficial for me in terms of, I mean, it wasn't, some days it was very, very slow because of all the stress and lack of sleep and things, but just to help me have more energy to go back and be more supportive to her afterwards and just to process emotions. It's always been something that I've used for that. So that's why I think I was lucky that I had those things to rely on. And I had a great team of friends around me who were there. Basically, there's anything you can't do because you're in hospital with Isla or you're with Isla, this is what we're going to do to help out. And they were amazing.
And how's she doing now?
She's brilliant. She's doing really well now. She's now just over a year all clear.
Amazing.
So she goes for checkups every 3 months. We're pretty certain that the other ovary is fine at the moment. So they keep checking on that. And she's getting back. She's got back into hockey. She's starting to get back into running, which it's difficult for teenage girls that stop to start again. So that's been one of the things that's been really hard. At the same time, she's juggling. So it is a lot on her plate. And it's just trying to now say, okay, running doesn't have to be competitive. It can actually be something that just helps you cope with everything else that's going on.
And I think you demonstrated that perfectly. And I think, you know, just you talking about the headspace that running brings, You know, even when you stop competing and you don't have that focus of a goal, you know, just getting out and moving your body can be such a relief to so many people. And particularly when you're going through such a challenging time, like you said, it doesn't have to be the fastest run ever. It doesn't have to be the best run you've ever done, but it's just putting one foot in front of the other. And I think that's an amazing motto to live by.
It's just the feel good of just kind of, you come back from a run. There are very few times in my life when and usually because I've got injured, when I've come back from a run feeling worse than when I went.
Definitely. My final few questions. I would love to know what brings you joy now. Obviously, I'm guessing a lot of people probably think, you know, once you retire from such a successful career, how do you get your kicks now? Obviously, you still run, but what brings you joy now?
Lots of things. I think when you do retire is when you can actually look back on all of the good things that happen in your career and probably take a little bit more time to actually appreciate them. Because at the time, you're always moving on. It's like, okay, that is great. And it's a huge, big thing to me, but I'm now aiming for that. And you kind of keep moving on. And it's only when you retire that you look back and think, actually, that was really good. And I'm really proud of that. And even if it doesn't stand anymore, I'm still really proud of it. And things like that.
Yeah.
And I think then also moving over to other areas of my life and doing things sometimes that are outside of my comfort zone, doing things with my kids gives me a lot of joy. And then sometimes it's really just simple now. Like I'm really lucky that I live in a beautiful place to go running. And sometimes just to go running, just to be the only person up there and look at the view and think, actually, it is pretty good right here and now.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think sometimes we search for joy in so many places.
Yeah.
And maybe it's, you know, a lot of the time it's about bringing it back to, it's not buying things, it's not doing fancy things, it's actually just sometimes getting out for a nice walk and just looking at a view and being like, life is good.
Yeah,
I think that's such a,
and just taking the time to appreciate it and think,
definitely, definitely. And in terms of your legacy, obviously you will leave an incredible one in the running community, but do you have any specific things that you'd like to leave as part of, you know, your stamp on running and on particularly on long distance running?
Oh well, The mottos that I always tried to live by were just to find out how good I could be and be the best that I could be, but fairly. And definitely kind of that fairness side of it is really important to me. That it is a level playing field, that we try as much as possible to kind of keep cheats out of the sport and to give everybody a fair opportunity to see how good they can be.
Yeah.
And to just push those personal boundaries.
And I think that really brings it back to everything that you seem like you're about with running. It's about fun. It's about enjoying it. It's about pushing yourself, but, you know, but also enjoying that process and doing it with other people around you that are, you know, having the same good time. So I think it's amazing to finish on that note. And I'm so grateful for your time today and for everything that you shared with us. I think there's so much that can be taken from sport that goes outside of just the physical. And I think it's always so nice to speak to people like yourself who really bring it back to, you know, that it's so multifaceted, and that, you know, your mindset, your approach, your upbringing, your community, everything matters. And all of that can make for such a positive experience with sport. And, you know, hopefully you've inspired quite a few people right now to lace up their trainers and go out for a run. Well, thank you so much, Paula. I hope you have a great rest of your day. And yeah, look,
thank you. You too.
Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. I would love it if you could take some time to rate, review, and follow the podcast, as it really helps others to find it. We have a new episode dropping each week, so this will also ensure you don't miss out. See you next time.